Subscriber's amazingly ultimate fundraising superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Ta-da! Hello. How are you doing, everyone? You're all very welcome here. Thanks very much for joining us for another live stream. On here, I'm just trying to find out where all my sound is coming from because I'm hearing huge amounts of sound from different places. So that's not good. So you're all very welcome. My name is Simon Scriver. If you don't already know me, I am one of the co-founders of Fundraising Everywhere. We do regular fundraising training. We do regular training around all sorts of nonprofit stuff. And we also... I see where my double thing is coming from. Sorry about that. Okay. And we also offer a virtual platform to anyone who's looking to run their own virtual events and live streams, conferences, fundraising events, whatever it is. So we try and help them out. We also run a number of free events, every week, every month, every year. And we try and stay on top of what our members and what our viewers are kind of interested in. And one of the hot topics at the moment, obviously, is around what the UK call furloughing. And we'll get into this a little bit because there's obviously different terms in different countries and different rules in different countries. So in terms of nonprofits, people in the charity sector, organizations in the charity sector not being able to continue the way they're continuing because of everything going on with COVID-19, and making the decision to put staff on various forms of leave, generally unpaid leave and things like that. And so obviously a lot of charities have been hit by this and a lot of staff in the sector have been hit by this. You may have seen me talk to Nikki Wrench about this on a live stream a week or two ago. So today what I have, what we've arranged is we have Nikki back with us, and she's going to be talking to us a little bit from the point of view of an employee, someone who's actually gone through furloughing. I'm not going to mention her organization unless she particularly wants to. But Nikki's also set up a furloughed fundraisers group on Facebook, which I recommend you checking out if you're impacted by this. And it's just a really huge community now of people supporting each other and talking through what they're going through. And I've also got Gillian Knight, who's going to come on. She's a bit of an expert on HR. She's been highly recommended by a couple of people who've worked with her on stuff. She's obviously based in Ireland, but she's going to try and give us some sort of insight from the point of view of employers and I suppose the kind of questions that we as employees should be asking, should be looking at how we kind of protect ourselves going through this. So I won't waste any more time. I know you're sick of my face and voice. I'm going to bring on Gillian and Nikki now, and we're going to say hello to them. Hello, Nikki. Hello, Gillian.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good. How are you? The very Irish coming through already. That's good. How are you guys doing? Gillian, how are you keeping? How are you managing through all of this?
Yeah, very good. I think that it's different stages. My clients are across every type of industry. As each industry gets hit in different ways, some of my clients are busier, some are quieter. And I just spent 2 hours on the phone to a CEO of a charity here as well. So I'm very much on point with the issues that the charities are facing as well currently.
I can imagine. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about what they're going through. But what's the name of your organization?
So I'm the managing director of a business called Cala Management Solutions. So we've been around since 2010. And basically, I deal with all industries and I specialize in employment law. So I'm primarily an employer's representative. I also work for the Licensed Vintners Association, and we advise publicans, Dublin publicans, on how to run their bar, and then we offer them HR advice as well.
Excellent, very good. And so your web address is kala.ie, kala.ie, if anyone wants to look at that. But I'm going to chat to you a little bit in a second. But Nikki Wrench, how are you doing? How's furloughing treating you?
Keeping myself busy.
Are you?
The weeks are actually flying by, weirdly. I thought it would go really slowly, but I think I've kept myself that busy that it is steadily moving. I thought it would really drag.
Yeah, I mean, time has become a little bit meaningless at the moment, hasn't it? It's very
this Thursday night, that's the only thing that's making me realise that a week's gone by when people start clapping at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, and I'm like, oh, another week. It used to be Monday mornings, and now it's Thursday nights.
And Nikki, so we talked about this last time you were on. You set up the Facebook group, the Furloughed Fundraisers Group.
Yes.
And this is how many members have you got now in this?
We have just gone over 720, Okay. So as the weeks are going on and more people are getting furloughed, more people have joined. Obviously, some of those members are also charities that perhaps aren't furloughed at the minute, people in charities that aren't furloughed. They've come on to offer voluntary opportunities within their charities, but the main bulk of people in there are for furloughed fundraisers.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about the type of things people are questioning, and I suppose what people are struggling with at the moment, you know, what the common things are coming up. But I might just say, ask you, Jillian, obviously you deal from a more employer point of view. And so what is the vibe with your clients? Is this, you know, well, first of all, actually, maybe let's start with this actual term of furloughing, because as we've rightly pointed out, we don't use that term everywhere. So what is actually happening in terms of what is furloughing? What's the equivalent in Ireland? What's the equivalent everywhere else? What's the situation that people are going through, Gillian?
I think in Ireland, and I suppose in the legislation, it would be called temporary layoff. So it's laying people off, and then how they're funded, be it through state subsidy schemes, through social welfare schemes, and that's basically what would be how they're paid, would be the equivalent. So it's really just layoff, short-term layoff that we're dealing with. We hope short-term layoff currently, but some industries may be affected longer. So I would have laid off around 10,000 people over the last 6 weeks, and some would have been laid off as in their job, they're not working any hours and claiming various state supports, and then others are working partial hours depending on the business, you know, and what their needs are.
And is this something that's usually, oh, that's my son. Yeah. Is this something that's usually covered within people's contracts, or is this really exceptional circumstances that doesn't usually happen?
As I said to Simon just before the call, prior to Brexit, the EU was brought in on an EU directive which would cover the UK and Ireland as well and the rest of Europe. With Brexit now, things may change, certain things may stay the same, but as it stands, layoff is covered under legislation, and part of that legislation required certain things to be done. So staff should have been given as much notice as possible. They should have been given this in Ireland, an RP9 form. You complete this, and then after 30 days, in the 13 weeks preceding the 30 days, if you don't give them notice, then they actually should be allowed to apply for redundancy. So over a month ago, we would lobbied and things like that, and saying that a business can't survive if everyone's claiming redundancy. We lobbied, and the government have recognised that. And in Ireland, and I'm not sure, I assume in the UK as well, they set up emergency legislation, and that means that they can't apply for redundancy in this circumstance. They didn't need to do an RP9 form. So this is completely unique. So if I was laid off in the past, there was a number of steps that needed to be followed, and there was a very limited supports that were offered, you know, by way of financial. So currently in Ireland, people can claim certain supports, 85% up to certain incomes, 70% after incomes, and in the UK then up to 80% to £2,500 a month, and so those support systems weren't there either, you know. So everything about this is unique. But as I spoke to clients this morning, I have clients that are undertakers, I spoke to charities, there's other things about this that aren't unique. I deal with people who have, you know, illnesses, be it, for example, epilepsy. They suddenly get an illness and they can't work anymore, or they've circumstances at home. So there's certain things that will govern. But because we've got scale here, you know, in Ireland, around 1.1 million people on social welfare currently, and whereas before we were almost at zero employment, technically around 250,000. With that in mind, we're in a situation where everything's unique and everything is changing on a day-to-day basis at times. So can't make long-term plans. And that's where we're really at. So when I talk to clients, normally we strategize, we plan, and we know a fund. So where we're challenged at the moment is there's a lot of employers that would like to top up wages, for example. And sure. I would prefer against that currently. I would have said initially, we don't know how long you're going to be closed. So if I look at my budgets and I say, when we open, if I've 6 weeks, okay, let's top them up. But we're in a situation now where, one, we don't know how long we're going to be closed for. And then when we open, we don't know what we're going to be faced with. So we may be reopening, and then we may have restrictions in reopening. So for charities, a huge amount of their funds, for example, are gained through social gatherings. And now I'm not allowed to do a social gathering. So where's my funds going to come from? Now, there may be people will invent other ways to gain funds, but will they be as effective? We don't know. So with that in mind, a lot of businesses are currently in a position where they can't plan. They have the unknown ahead and they've no parallels. They've nothing to compare it to. And that's where we're currently at. So in the event of the unknown, a lot of employers have been painted as cruel. Debenhams have shut down and they're giving statutory redundancy and people are saying they should claim more. By law, if you're insolvent, you can't give big packages and claim insolvency. So I don't understand what they're protesting for. So I see an employee's point of view, but I equally see the employer's point of view. So the main focus we have as an employer, I am one myself and my clients, is to ensure the long-term viability of the firm, of the charity, of the premises. And that means that I have to safehold it, and that may result in redundancies, short-term hours, layoffs, and not topping up wages. And that's the reality, but it is necessary. Some of them are being overgenerous currently, and I'm not sure they're going to survive this because they started and they can't potentially continue.
Because it's the fear that what they commit to now, they're committed to. So if they say they're going to pay you for the duration of the lockdown, or if they say, you know, whatever they commit to, they don't have no idea of how long that's going to last. And so what you're saying there is, People are not necessarily being stingy or unforthcoming. They're just trying to protect themselves because it's still so much uncertainty.
Exactly. And I think I just read an email before this call from an employee who was very upset with her employer and saying, you don't care, etc. I think that sometimes in certain circumstances, if your employer had a history of being generous and now they appear not being generous, that's when people are quite surprised at that. And I think that there needs to be an understanding of the commercial realities of this. Zero tourism, a lot of industries very heavily hit. So less flowing cash in the system. And with that in mind, then people can't budget for good times. They may come, but they can't budget for that. But with that in mind, they have to really be prudent about how they operate with their teams.
Okay. Nikki, I'm not going to ask you to speak on behalf of all furloughed people everywhere, but obviously you've kind of got your finger a bit on the pulse by being one of the admins of this Facebook group. What's the vibe from employees? Are people feeling like they're being treated unfairly, or are they feeling confused, or what's the general feeling?
I think overwhelmingly with I think fundraisers and charity staff are a different breed, in all honesty, because overwhelmingly the feeling has been that they're more frustrated that they can't help the charities that they work for. I haven't heard anybody complain that their charities aren't. I've heard a couple of people say their charities are topping up from the 80% to the 100% if they've been furloughed, but the majority aren't. I've not heard anyone complain that their charity isn't. I think when you work in charity, there's that, you already know that struggle for money anyway. Yeah. And I think the majority of us already feel guilty that we even take a wage, but you've got to because it's your job. I haven't seen anything. The only thing I think from a point of view of people feeling frustrated is that they've been furloughed in the first place. There's that feeling of why me? My role's important. But from the things that you've just mentioned about businesses being stingy or people feeling that they're not being given enough support, I haven't come across that at all yet within our group, or certainly not within the charity that I work for.
Okay. Well, that's interesting in terms of people maybe looking at other people in their organization who haven't been laid off or who haven't put on hold. Gillian, how are your clients and organizations in general, how are they making that decision of who they can scale back and who they can't? Is that a really difficult decision for them?
I think that what we have done, what I would have recommended to people and what we have done in a lot of cases was that it was a financial one. So we would have said, for example, in Ireland, on the social welfare scheme, you get €350 irrespective of how many hours you worked. So if I ask someone to come in and I say, I'm going to come in and pay you, they'd actually earn less coming in than staying at home. And then so what our focus was more often than not was to actually give the work to the full timers so they can get near their normal wage, and that the part timers were already on their normal wage or less. So it was a financial thing to try and bridge the full timers up to their usual wage. And then with the part timers, so we usually, there's a cutoff point of earnings, and we would have picked that point. Because a lot of staff, for example, on the lower earners, they would have mainly been in hospitality. A lot of the part-timers there, it was a bit challenging to say, can you come into work and you're going to earn less, you know, and that was a hard sell to them. So we kind of just said, who do we need? And then full-timers would usually have oftentimes just one income coming in. So it's to try and recreate that income for them. I think that there's other roles where it's we've had people push back. And that's why I'm saying, Nikki, I've had a lot of people saying, I don't want to work. I want to stay at home. One for health, one for because they feel they're making more money at home. And then there's the other side, like you said, there's one saying, I want to contribute, I want to. In a charity, it's very different. I think that, and it depends on your role within said charity as well. Usually the finance function, the management functions are still running. But I think that if you're in a business, some of the employers can make an assumption that you are one of the parties that I'm talking about. And, you know, if you feel that you've been, you know, laid off and you actually would like to work, perhaps we could approach your owner, you know, the management and say, I understand this. I'm willing to contribute X amount of hours. Some may not have that luxury. For example, schools are shut. I've got two kids at home. How can I work as well? So for some, it's not feasible. And then they could feel pressurized saying, oh, Nikki's gone into work and she's presented herself. So she's going to look marvelous and I'm going to look really bad now.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword. We're kind of tied because there's so many individuals in each premises. So sometimes it's easier to do what you do for one, you do for all. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The guilt thing comes across. And a lot of people say, I've never claimed social welfare. I've never claimed from the state. But I would say you are not claiming from the state. You pay social insurance and all you're doing is taking out of a bank account that you've contributed. If you've never worked, you are taking from the state, as in you've never put anything back into the state. And I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that's the reality. But anyone who's worked has been contributing. You've been lodging money and now you're taking it back. It was a social insurance. And now if your house burnt down, you would claim your insurance without guilt. And it's the same thing. You have paid your own insurance. So I think sometimes it's a matter of you could sit at home and think of ideas and share ideas and say, I've been thinking about this. Start researching different fundraising activities that are happening globally and see how could we contribute. What way online? What can we do through social distancing? Who could I approach to bring attention to my charity? Maybe there's some, you know, celebrities as such that you could try and say they're not actually representing any business, da, 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 and come to your business with ideas. And that might bridge the I feel I should be doing something. But I think that the whole NHS, the HSC, the whole thing is you're already doing something by staying at home, you know, so the kind of guilt factor of staying at home is you are staying at home to save lives at the same time. So we're kind of tied as employers because we understand, we say, you know, Nikki would love to work, but if Nikki comes into work, then I have to bring Joe and Mary and I can't justify them in there.
Yeah.
I cut that back. That's going to make John and Joe feel bad because they're sitting at home and they can't work because their wife has to work. And then they're sitting there, they have to mind the children, you know.
Yeah.
It's too circumstantial, and most charities are small, but if you're in the large charities, it's different. So the size of your enterprise will have a huge bearing as well on that. So smaller places, you could facilitate specific things. Larger places, less so.
I think you both kind of touched on an interesting point there in terms of the charity sector is a little bit different in that, you know, charity employees generally earn less than other sectors. And I think part of that is the good feeling, or, you know, we want to support. I mean, Nikki, sorry to bring this up if you don't want me to bring this up, but Nikki works for a charity who actually she benefited from when she was a child. Like, she actually was a service user as a child. So I think there is a pressure we put on ourselves in the sector where we don't want to cost the organization anything. We don't want to pull out any money that maybe we feel, you know, we're on the fence about, because it feels like it has a direct impact on the services. It has a direct impact on the beneficiaries, and there's that guilt. And what you seem to be saying there, Gillian, and I would agree, is like, at the end of the day, you have to look after yourself. You have to survive and you have to be part of this. And you know, it's not taking money you're not entitled to. As you say, it's insurance. You're entitled to this. You've paid towards this. And if it's there, we should be taking it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, some charities are topping up, and I would have said, you know, to my client this morning, I said it is would be unusual for them to cut their hours by half. You know, they were saying that the board was saying in their charity was saying, let's cut their hours by half. And they're very busy. And I said, there's no reason for that. With the safe state subsidy, you can still get the state subsidy if you reach their criteria. Mm. And you can pay staff and have them working. And I wouldn't agree with cutting their salary. I'd agree with cutting their hours if that's what you need to do. I don't like asking people to do more work for less money. I think moving to a 4 days and give them more time off. But I think that in real, real terms, you know, some businesses are making a decision to top up, but certain charities are less affected by this. Certain charities are state funded. So the state will fund and those funds are still, they've been guaranteed funds. So they don't have a justification to not top up, for example. Mm-hmm. And then other charities are the people who contribute to them might be the most affected by COVID-19. With that in mind, their actual funds have been most affected. So it will depend on the financial standing of your charity, the reserves they have within your charity, and their views on the other side of this. How is their charity going to be affected? Because, for example, you know, it will be very prevalent now that if I'm a charity that's raising money to get PPE, to get ventilators, you can see, you know, like Captain Tom that and the NHS, they're hugely benefiting financially from these initiatives because they're topical at the moment. And suddenly then someone else might be for musculoskeletal issues and then they're down the line. Someone else might be for the homeless and they're up, you know. So every charity, every business is going to be affected differently and they will make a decision based on that, you know. And as I said, I would say to everyone, you know, there isn't an opportunity to spend your money unless you go online like crazy. You should spend as little money as possible just in case. Do you know what I mean? I would say try and have some sort of fund there if you can, just out the other side of this, because what we're experiencing currently is that if the state opens, for example, in each country and says, oh, you're not allowed mass gatherings over 100 people and you have 1,000 people for a fundraising dinner that you fill every year and that's 80% of your funding, you've got to revisit that. So I would say we have 10 dinners instead of one big dinner, you know, so have 100, 100, 100 or whatever. But that doesn't bring in as much oftentimes because the cost will increase with lack of scale. But we just want to revisit this. But look at your business and say, and it is a business. A charity is in the business of charity, and say, how do you think realistically we're going to be at the other side of this? Does that make sense? And, and companies, owners, we don't like to, we like to share things with staff. But like the government, you only want to share once a decision has been made because of stress. So you oftentimes people say they're not telling me. But if you tell someone something and then you change your mind, it can cause more stress. So actually less is more oftentimes when you're dealing with the majority of staff. You know,
Well, you can't speculate and you certainly can't speculate in writing almost because you get committed to it. Nikki, from your organization and from other people, you know, do you feel like those lines of communication are there with your employer? Are they keeping you updated? Do you feel like comfortable, you know, as best as you can what's going to happen, or do people feeling a bit stranded?
Again, from only my point of view, with my charity, we're getting an update every week from the CEO. So he sends us an email every Friday. The first couple were just generally, you know, how are you? Hope you're okay. As the weeks have gone on, and as more things are going on within the charity, we're getting updates. I think it depends on what your charity's doing at the moment. Ours, you know, we are going to be a very different charity at the end of this. You know, we won't be able to do even half of what we were doing before. So our organisation will have to have a restructure. They will have to think about those things. So we're getting updates every week on where they're at in that decision-making process as well. But they're being very transparent. You know, we've got a WhatsApp group. So like the fundraising team have got a WhatsApp group, and although we can't talk about work, we're all just checking in and saying, is everyone okay? So yeah, it is very open and very transparent. I saw someone in the group the other day had received a parcel from their employer with some chocolates in and a card to say they were missing them. So yeah, it is, people don't seem to be complaining. It's all nice news stories that are coming out of it.
Okay.
But I do see everything with like a happy rose tinted thing. So
yeah, you're too positive. I'm sick of it. you mentioned something interesting there, like in your WhatsApp group, you're not allowed to talk about work.
Well, I'm
curious to hear from both of you. Nikki, we talked about this before, but Gillian, I'm curious to hear from you. Like Nikki, and in that group, we've seen people who want to keep volunteering for their charity because they're so very passionate about it. And so even though their pay has been paused, they want to volunteer for it. And actually they're being told on occasion that they can't volunteer for it. They're legally not allowed to volunteer for it. Does that sound, what do you make of that, Gillian? Is that a strange thing to how do we deal with something like that?
You're an employee or not, So when you're laid off, if you're laid off and you're not asked to work any hours, you're not. So you wouldn't volunteer for your charity because you'd just be you're actually an employee, So you'd just be working hours. But in Ireland, you can still avail of the subsidy scheme even if you're working hours. So that wouldn't be an issue in Ireland. I'm not sure about the restrictions on the scheme in the UK. So in the Republic here, if you wanted to work, if I laid someone off, I can avail of the full wage subsidy scheme from revenue and I'm allowed to work a few hours. If, for example, I claim off the social welfare office, then I cannot work even an hour. The business can't even pay me a cent, but I couldn't claim social welfare and be working 10 hours for my charity. That is my current employer. I could volunteer. So you could volunteer for like the NHS, the HSE. You can volunteer work, but I couldn't volunteer for my own charity. No, because the insurance and everything, if something went wrong, they'd say, well, they're classed as an employee. And then it'd be fraud, So you'd have to be on the wage subsidy scheme in Ireland from revenue, which is run by the revenue commissioners, to be able to do some hours like you're suggesting. If you're on the social welfare scheme, you wouldn't know.
It seems like people are kind of worried about putting a foot wrong in case it nullifies everything that they would have been entitled to, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, there's a comment here from Mandy, and she's talking about the rules for being furloughed. That the government prescribed that you must return to work after the crisis in order for the furlough to be paid. So, I mean, that's a very specific example. And Gillian, I don't expect you to necessarily get into that. But
it should be paid. So if you own the business, like if the money comes weekly from the revenue scheme and from social welfare. So it's a weekly payment. Or if you're paid monthly, it's monthly through revenue commissioners. So it's paid all the time. So if the wage subsidy was paid out and the business wasn't eligible, for example, they weren't in Ireland down 25% of revenues, they couldn't prove that, and they were up on revenues, then they would ask for the business to pay it back. Or if you claim social welfare, for example, and you're working in two places part time and you claim off both, that would be fraud, and they would claim that back. But when you return to work after the crisis, you are just returned to work as normal, and there may be tax credit adjustments depending on your circumstance. I.e., usually if you're on social welfare, you'll get it depends on your salary, you'd get a lump sum back. But no, I can't see how that would happen. That would be an owner of a business's concern, and usually they've said that they'd resolve that in a week or two. It would be very, very unusual. That, if your business is closed and it's a very obvious one, 25% down, most of them are 100% down, but very percentages. But yeah, no, I couldn't see that happening,
So
that stems from something that's, so what they're saying is that a member of staff can be furloughed on the condition that their job will be there at the end of this. I don't think it means that they're guaranteed they have to return to work. But for example, if my charity do their restructure and decide actually Nikki's job's not needed, but we'll keep her on furlough and just make her redundant when they finish paying that, I don't think that's what the scheme is for. I think if they decide in a restructure halfway through that my job is redundant and they need to say, Nikki, you're redundant, hopefully that's not the case. But I think that's where that statement comes from, that furloughing is for if your job is only not available now because of coronavirus, not that you would have been made redundant anyway. That's my idea of it.
So basically the way it works is You never make a person redundant, you make a role redundant. So the business will have to, as with any redundancy, you have to determine that there's, in Ireland, there are, and currently there's five grounds for redundancy. So the person has to fall in one or more of those grounds, and has to be, that has to be the rationale why their role is made redundant. If their role is made redundant due to a downturn as a result of COVID, currently there is increased social welfare payments, for example. So in Ireland, it's €350 instead of €203. So I would rather I was made redundant, should I not be able to get a job straight away, that I was told I'm made redundant because of COVID, because a downturn in business would be the rationale by law. But actually then I would say downturn in business as a result of COVID, I can go into social welfare and I'll get €350 a week instead of €203 a week. But the business has to have a justified reason. So we can't just say, oh, I've always wanted to get rid of Gillian, I'm going to get rid of her now with the result. No, you have to have sound reason for it. And like any business, you can challenge it. You can go to the employment authority and you can appeal any determination. And there's if someone makes your role redundant, they have to give you notice of redundancy, the full rationale in writing as a result, naturally all payments. And they have to give you the right to appeal and the right to suggest alternatives to redundancy. After which the decision has been made, then you have the right to appeal it to an independent arbitrator. And in the absence of that, through the labour courts in Ireland, it's called the WRC, you can go into the Consumer Rights Authority and you can go in and claim these back and then make a claim in. Now, granted, they have been shut as well within reason. So you're not going to get heard till next year in the Republic. I would say the UK are quite similar, but you can still put a claim in. You just need to put it in within 6 months of your role, of you being let go, you know. Mm-hmm. I know redundancy in the UK is terrible low. The payments are very, very bad compared to the Republic over here. So, I mean, they max out at 14,600 based on length of service, whereas in Ireland, there's no max on length of service. It's 600. Mm-hmm. Per year service plus a bonus week, statutory, and capped at €600 a week. And then we've got notice of length of service. The UK length of service notice is longer than the Republic, but your redundancy payments are very, very low. So in Ireland, we have a situation where employers will say they've been with me for 30 years. Should I make their role redundant? They are due some of them 35,000. It's huge money. So currently, we're lobbying with the state to say, if you shut our business, we want you to bring in, there's a social insurance fund to pay so that people can get paid, because usually that's only serves when the business is insolvent. Because if your business can't afford to pay you redundancy, they can't make you redundant. That's the reality. So you have to get your redundancy money. You know, so we're saying that if it's only commercial reality is that I make these roles redundant, and then, but if I make these roles redundant, I'm going to come insolvent. We need the state to help. So they used to have a rebate. You could rebate 60% of it back and 70. So we want them to bring in the revenue rebate on the fund so that the business pays a certain proportion and the state pays the rest in Ireland. And then on the other side of it is potentially that the social insurance fund pays it. It doesn't matter. That's a European fund. But in the UK, your monies that in a redundancy scenario are far lower than ours. In Ireland, you could have a redundancy there. You could have 10 staff and you could have half a million of redundancy somewhere. Whereas in the UK, it would be very much a lot more manageable because of the restrictions on the payroll. Mm. Not good for the employee, but it's good for the employer, you know.
Where do people find information like this, or where's the easiest place? I mean, I imagine people are looking at this and they're worried about getting a HR expert or getting legal advice because you know they might not necessarily have to have the income for that right now.
I think one of the most important things, and I'll be killed by my employers for saying this, but I feel out of fairness, and what you need to do is, if your employer reduces your hours or reduces your salary, now it's in the Republic, but I'm almost sure it's in the UK as well, but it'd still be no harm in doing it. If they reduce your salary or hours, what you need to do is you need to write to them and say, I'll accept this under protest, but in the event of you making my role redundant, I demand my redundancy is paid on my original salary. If you don't say that, if I reduce your hours, down to 51%, if it's just more than half, if it's below half, I have to give you the option of redundancy. If it's just above half or anything above that, you accept that, then I can half my redundancy payment to you, because I'll only pay the redundancy on your new lower wage, on new lower hours. Whereas if I actually do that letter and have that on file, then actually I have to pay it on the original and the legislation will support that. So what a lot of people do is they get hit each way. And a lot of employers, like I don't advise employers like that, and I've no tolerance for employers like that. That's why I'm saying this now. So my clients don't do that business, but there are a lot of nasty ones out there. And I'm just saying that don't accept a cut in hours or wages out of good faith without writing that letter and saying, I'm accepting it, but I need it to be reinstated when the business is back up to where it should be. And on even on a gradual basis. And I also should, I, my role be made redundant. My redundancy has to be on my original salary.
I think, yeah, I mean, I imagine some employers justify actions like that because they tell themselves it's the only way they can survive is if they kind of, you know, screw someone over, or if they kind of, you know, put the pressure onto the employees. How should employees protect themselves? I mean, I suppose it's about getting things in writing, putting things in writing. They should be getting advice, should they, if there's any kind of concerns.
So that's where I would say, like, that's a simple one that I would just say to every person to do, you know, in the event of this occurring. And I think it's out of fairness. But in Ireland, there's Citizens Information Bureau. They're excellent, you know, and they will advise you for free. The WRC, the Workplace Relations, so it's workrelations.ie, they will offer you. In the UK, they have citizens information in every single borough in the whole country, and you can go into them, and they have their own labour courts, a free line that you can call and ask, you know. So I would be very wary. Some people build arguments and destroy relationships with their employers because they have a little knowledge. They go, you can't do that, it's so heavy. And a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So I would come equipped with, and I would not come from an aggressive stance with people, with employers. I would always give them a get out and say, you know, you may be familiar with this. So I helped a friend's wife there recently that she was made redundant, and they did a settlement, but they did the settlement wrong. And in the end, anyway, she got almost 5,000 more. But she got that money because I came in and I could see them kind of messing her around, and she didn't know. So I came in nicely and said, hi, I'm her representative now. This must have been an oversight, do this, and suddenly she's 5 grand the richer. So I would say that a lot of the solicitors and barristers, it's usually €200 to talk to them. UK is probably anything, I can't imagine a letter be less than £100, whereas the citizens information will write these in for free. But the my tips are, check it out, check with your local providers. Timing is everything. So don't say, do you remember that thing you did 3 months ago that bothered me now? You've got to do it at the time. Now, I'm not saying they send you an email at 8 o'clock that night and you write back at a minute past eight angry. Sleep on it. But don't let months go by, and ideally don't let more than 2 weeks go by without raising the issue. Does that make sense? So I would say that you need to be very, very clear at the outset. This is what you've done. This is how it's affected you. Can you remedy it? And if they don't, then you've a claim. If you haven't highlighted the issue, where they went wrong, and you don't have to suggest a solution, but, you know, if you come to them with that and then they choose to ignore it, they have a stronger case. Yeah.
Very good. That's very helpful. Nikki, I might see if you have any questions for Gillian, but there's one come up here for Jared, who is an Irish fundraiser I know, who's worked for a couple different organisations. He's saying, I mean, I imagine you might need more detail than this, but what happens when an employer just emails all staff saying salaries have been cut by 30%? And so, he's talking about using the COVID payment scheme in there. But
So basically it's like this. That is a unilateral change to your terms and conditions. So an employer, you have the Terms of Employment Information Act govern your terms of employment, okay? And coupled with the Payment of Wages Act. So there's a numerous piece of legislation. In Ireland, it's like 40 pieces of legislation minimum. And then within those, there's multiples. So they're in the hundreds. But basically, you have, as an employer, a right to write a contract of employment. You should have terms within 5 days and a contract within a month of employment. And those terms cannot be changed without both of your expressed agreement. So any email to saying your salary has been cut by 30%, no, you can't do that as an employer. What I can do is I can ask, and I need to justify it. I need to give an idea of how long this is going to continue for, or the rationale, i.e., given this, because of that, we are suggesting this. We hope you'll agree. We're going to start it on this date. If you have any queries or concerns, let us know by that date. Otherwise, your silence will be your expressed agreement. In that circumstance, with Gerard there, what I would say is, that's not the way to do the staff. It's against the law. And then I would probably be writing back and I would say, firstly, like I suggested, I do not agree to this. I also, in the event of later on terminations, rationalizations, demotions, etc., any payments be based on my original salary, you know.
Interesting.
But I would say that, you know, there's a lot of places will jump on the bandwagon and they'll do this, or they'll do it out of ignorance. They're not paying for providers to advise them. So employers will pay me and I will actually write a message to staff which shows some benevolence towards them and compassion, but equally just tells them the law straight, you know. So
yeah,
transparent. So they've broken the law by what they're doing. If no one says anything, they'll get away with it.
Yeah, and I'm surprised by that, because if it's the organisation I think Jared's talking about, it's quite a large, well-known Irish charity.
The biggest culprits of all these, like the solicitors and barristers, what's going on in their businesses is unbelievable. You know, people think, oh, they're not doing it. You know, you'd be shocked with the type of businesses that are doing this. You know,
yeah.
I reviewed, there's a huge retailer chain there, and I reviewed their contract of employment, and I found 6 things that were straight illegal by Irish employment law standards. They were unlawful, and they hired tens of thousands of people, you know. So just because they're big doesn't mean they do it right. Does that make sense? And many do, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'd be quite shocked. That's why you hear these cases with large places, how they mess up, you know.
Wow. Nikki, is there anything that you're seeing in the group, any questions that keep coming up time and time again that maybe Gillian would be able to help us with?
Yeah, one that's been asked a couple of times is that some employers are going to the furloughed fundraisers and asking them if they will give up their annual leave when they go back to help the charity out. Some people are being rose-tinted like me and going, yeah, whatever it takes to help. But rightly, others are saying, actually, I need that annual leave for specific things. Yeah. Or just, I don't want to, actually. That's my annual leave and I want to take it when I want to take it. What's the rules around that?
when Gillian picks herself off the floor.
I do hear stuff all the time, and I just will laugh into myself. Some genius there. So annual leave is governed under the Organisational Working Time Act, both UK and Ireland. And you are given annual leave for a reason. It's for your health and well-being. You cannot ask someone to give up their health and well-being time. So the answer is no. It is completely unlawful. You're not being lacking in generosity by saying no. So if you got, for example, 30 days annual leave and the legislation is 20 statutory and they say, we've been very generous forever and you've got 30 days, would you reduce that down to 20? Then that's different. But I would not, as a full-timer or 8% of hours work for a part-timer, would not reduce my hours less than the 20-day equivalent. Is that all right? So if I work one day a week, then I get 4 days annual leave a year. If I work 2 days, I get 10. If I work 5 days, I get 20. Mm. And that's the way it is, you know. And you can't sacrifice that, because anyway, when you leave employment or you challenge it within the 6 months, they'll have to pay it back to you anyway financially. So there's no way around it. I see a question there. It hasn't come up on Simon's, but it links into this there, you know. You don't accrue annual leave during layoff. So, for example, if you're getting 20 days a year and you're on layoff for a quarter of the year, then that's 5 days that are taken off your 20. But you do accrue public holidays. That doesn't include Good Friday. They have a special day in Ireland. That's not a public holiday. But, you know, the 9 in Ireland, there's 9 public holidays. The UK have, I think, 7. There's less. But basically, public holidays are accrued and public holidays that. But the business doesn't have to pay me that public holiday. If you're on social welfare payments and a payment comes in, they'll cut you off social welfare. So what I've said to employers is, when the person returns to work, they can be given an additional day annual leave and they can take that at a time that's suitable business. Again, like your question, Nikki, do not sacrifice your public holiday entitlement to give back to the business. No.
I mean, the charity sector is, I love working in the charity sector, and obviously most of my clients are charities, but there isn't a feeling sometimes with some of them that they're a poor charity when it suits them, and they're an established, you know, legal business when it suits them. And I think it's like, you know, if you're choosing to follow the law and behave in a society that follows the law, then you have to do things lawfully. And as charities, we have to try and do things ethically as well. And so, you know, it's not really, it seems a bit off to turn around now and just be like, oh, and also could you donate back your holiday days, and could you donate back this and poor us?
I think that if you work for a charity, you're not a charity. You know, like, just because you work for a charity, you're not a charity. And Nikki, you're talking about the valuable input you put into a business. That needs to be remunerated, you know. So you were offering, if you weren't there, the charity wouldn't exist. It wouldn't generate funds. And that's every party to it, be the cleaner right up to the CEO or the MD there. So you have to determine. But I see someone saying in the UK you do accrue annual leave when you're laid off. If you're accruing it when you're laid off, then you still are entitled to it. And I would take it. And in the end of the day, there's different ways the business can make monies back, or they can look at things like that. But asking you to sacrifice that, what they can do, okay? And what I would recommend my clients, what I've asked them to do is, if I give you 30 days notice, I can actually ask you to take leave. So I can take, let's say you've 10 days accrued so far this year, and it's today is whatever, the 29th of April. On the 29th of May, I can say from the 29th of May, I want you to take the next 2 weeks off and use 10 days of your annual leave, so that you're not accruing it. So you're currently laid off, but you're using your annual leave that way. So if they are asking you, they're probably not being very clever about it, saying, can you give it up? Because that is another way of giving it up. But if you're asked to tip in and do a bit of work during those 2 weeks, then they can't be doing that. You're on annual leave, you know. So I could say to someone, in a month's time, can you? Now, I can ask, can you do it now? And you could say, yeah, I'm okay at taking it now. But legally, I'm supposed to give you 30 days notice, unless, I express agree, I don't mind taking it now. That's fine. So it would be prudent of a business to get people to use annual leave if they envisage that when they open, it's going to be all hands on deck, and the last thing they want is a load of people with a pile of leave. And equally, if they're paying the monies, then it would be a good way, if they're topping up wages, to say that wage is inclusive of annual leave accrued and public holidays. So anyone I laid off for the top-ups in place, I wrote to the staff and I said, you're paid X, it was 70% for most people, 85 for others. I said, that's inclusive of annual leave and public holidays. And we'll calculate the figure back. And if they're still due more after it, they'll be paid because they're entitled to it. And that would be prudent. So perhaps what they're asking there, they might be asking something and they don't need to ask, they could actually tell. Again, that's just someone who's probably not doing the best management practices, you know.
Yeah. There's a little question here. I'm not going to keep you guys for too much longer, but there's a little question here from someone on Facebook about bank holidays. And again, this might differ from country to country, but do bank holidays operate in the same way when you're furloughed?
I just gave that answer there, the last one. So public holiday and bank holiday, same thing. So legally, there's no such thing as a bank holiday unless you work in the bank. Bank holiday is just a public holiday, same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so bank holidays are what the casual term for it. Public holiday is what a bank holiday and public holiday are technically the same thing. It's just the public use the term bank holiday when in actual fact it's a public holiday.
Okay, excuse me. Yeah, I get that now. And someone's followed up. I think it's the same person. If you're asked to take annual leave, would it then be paid at the full rate and not the furloughed rate of pay? Presumably it would stay at whatever your official rate of pay currently is.
Yeah, so it should be at your proper rate. You know, you don't have a furloughed rate. That's what you're currently being paid. That's not your rate. Your rate of pay is the same. That's what you're taking home currently.
Okay, so it's the contracted rate that we need to be looking at.
Yeah, so you're currently claiming, the state is claiming X for you or social welfare, you get it, but that's not your rate. If you're on £10 an hour, you're on £10 an hour. If you're on £100 an hour, you're on £100 an hour, and that rate remains untouched.
Okay, I think that makes sense. Nikki, anything else?
Yeah, so last question is, so obviously, I think this is slightly different in UK to Ireland. So what we've been advised, or majority of us have been advised, is that if you've been furloughed, it's basically that the government are paying your 80% of your wages because of coronavirus, and therefore you can't work or help your employer gain money because otherwise the government's paying you, but you're still working. We have had some people that have been asked if they would still be on hand in an advisory capacity for their charities, even though they've been furloughed. So I think initially the answer straight away there is, well, I can't. But I think people are finding it. You mentioned it earlier, Gillian, about not wanting to sort of look like you're the person that they shouldn't have back. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people are going along with certain things because they're worried that that might play against them further down the line. What would your advice be for people to go back with, to their employers with?
I think that your representative bodies need to lobby like we did over here. You know, I'm part of a representative body and we lobbied so that you could allow for additional hours. So they need to do a better job like they've done here, you know. But I would say that it's the business that if you felt forced to help, if you want to help like you had originally said, then that's okay. If you feel you've been forced to help, refuse. And you don't want it, for example, you can refuse with peace of mind. If you want to, it's the businesses run the risk, not you. You know what I mean? And who's going to know in real terms? If Joe sends you a text and says, what's the password for that login? Because they've never used it before. Or, oh, Twitter's gone mad at me and you usually manage Twitter and you do that. That's not going to be a problem because no one's going to know or care. The people who pay these monies, their revenue for the most part, your revenue commissioners, you know, and they're not employment law. They're not going to govern employment law. They're governing the financials. So they see, has the business hit the financial indicator of what's necessary? So they're not monitoring that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the business. If the business is asked to do you to do that, they govern the risk of doing that. And that's called good faith. And in an employment relationship, there's every both parties are involved in it in good faith. So if your business is claiming it and they're working, you're having you working 30 hours a week, that's not in good faith to any party. But if the business has you and they're managing and one day you're doing 3 hours because something cropped up and you're helping out, good faith would determine that that's not an issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, okay.
An expectation or force or both or the feeling of that, you can refuse. Or if you just straight don't want to, you can refuse. Does that make sense?
So I think most people, it's that worry of if I help and got caught by Boris, am I not going to get my pay?
I'm not going to express my views of Boris, but I don't think Boris, he get lost in his own pockets, but they're not governing this. Does that make sense? This is all new. And in real terms, public health is the main priority on every government's agenda for most countries, right? And it should be. And that's the way it is. And in the UK and Ireland, it's to try and keep as many people alive as possible. And then to do so, it's to try and keep the company, the economy buoyant as possible, i.e. to keep funds coming in so people can live, et cetera, et cetera. With that in mind, if you're doing something that's going to keep the business flowing, as in open, especially in a charity perspective, no one's going to have any issues and say, Nikki took that call or did 3 hours there last week and 2 hours this week. No one's going to care. Does that make sense? So it's not out and outright fraud, but there are some businesses that are perhaps going to play it down that they're 20. In Ireland, you have to be 25% down in revenues, and they're 26% down in revenues. They're pulling it in and they're going to downplay their revenues and post date checks and do all this stuff and make money out of this and then going to treat staff badly as a result. That is some enterprise and it's going to take a lot of work to get through that. But in those circumstances, the employees are well aware of the way they are. That's the only circumstance where that's going to be a major issue. But I think that in real terms, in the Republic here and of Ireland, they've said, you know, they initially did what you did. You can't work at all. The welfare said you can't work at all. But they've actually changed it now. And even if you've got 10 staff and 4 are working full time, they can still claim the subsidy on the full time workers over here. You know, so it is very different and probably more conducive to business continuity. So I think if you want to help out, don't stress. That's the owners have the management have taken that risk on board and asked you. And you're not going to get in trouble. There's no revenue commissioner going to come at you on this. They may come at the business later on if it was taking the mick, you know. And I, from what you're saying, that's just good faith, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, you're talking kind of more of the odd question as opposed to this consistent task that you're asking.
And the whole point of this wage subsidy scheme, as well, as opposed to sending everyone to social welfare, one was an administration, two was that you maintain the employment relationship. Your CEO is writing to you weekly. So with that in mind, that makes sense. Does that, you know, so if you're sitting there and you're sharing ideas, et cetera, or you say, I've got this, I've thought at home, and you present yourself with availability to your employer, if they uptake on that, I don't think there's any major issue, just so long as it's not huge hours, you know, that shouldn't be a problem. And no one's going to know in real terms or care, you know.
I think that answers what people have been saying. So.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you. And don't forget, like, you know, a lot of the time I'm dealing with management all the time, and I'm not kind of a lot of managers are actually at the, you know, I'm hearing all these clap for the NHS and everything, but I'm actually dealing with managers that are working, like the HR people and the owners, that are very, very stressed and want to be able to help staff and always have done. And, you know, they want to do the best for staff. But they're tied between a board who's telling them one thing, who can oftentimes be very detached. They don't know these people personally, and they're very commercial about things, irrespective. Like, a lot of boards in charities will be very commercial, and it's a strict number game. So I think that if you kind of show, you know, your managers are asking how you are. Very few people are asking how the manager's doing, you know, and the owners, et cetera. So sometimes the manager is between a board and no one cares about how they're doing. And, you know, we had a doctor there, a senior doctor in New York that made the papers that committed suicide this week because they're trying and they're hitting an impasse, you know, because they're not being listened to. I'm not saying all the poor managers and owners, but some people are going, oh, they're still on a full wage, where actually they're not. And a lot of the time they've been hit tremendously on their salaries as well, and you wouldn't even know about it. And there can be an assumption there. So I think it's sometimes I've seen some of the employees just saying, I'd like to help in any way I can. If it's even just to help you, great. And in my role, I've had some of the people I work with kind of going, is there anything we can do to help you? And it doesn't matter if I take up that help or not. It's actually like, you know, that was nice. You know that I'm going to do it? So I think if you show that and genuinely care, and most people in charities are that way inclined, but don't make yourself a charity. You know, don't sit there and take a hit on salary. Don't do the annual leaves or anything like that. You're not being mean doing that. You know, the business needs to be a bit cleverer about how they approach these things. And later on, they could say, well, you know, next year, you know, we'll do X, Y, and Z and look at it. But they need to be a bit more creative, perhaps, about how they treat their staff and how they get over this hurdle, than just saying to people, let's hit you there, you know. And sometimes it's, we'll go to all our providers and see if we can cut 10% off all their costs. So let's get negotiating. And, you know, we're buying this, that and the other. Let's try and get a better deal across the board, you know. And there's things like that can add to long-term gains for a business. So I've seen it where we did it in a business. We asked everyone in the business to look in their area and see how they can make savings. And the overall business made an increase of 20% from every party down to the office. Saying, you could get this chemicals. I don't need as much of that. That one's, you know, you'd be shocked how people can actually add to the business without you taking off your annual leave. But one of the things you can do is say, like I've said to my clients, I'm not going to invoice you till you reopen, or till, you know what I mean, because it's easier for them and I can burden that cost. It's not an issue. So you could say, well, look, I don't mind carrying on my annual leave till next year. You know, if you permit, I don't want to sacrifice my annual leave, but I don't mind taking my annual leave next year. You know?
Yeah, it's not necessarily an all or nothing option, that there's a conversation that can be had there.
I think that's a good point you just made as well, about the managers are affected in this as well, because I think there can be that thing of, you know, well, we've been affected and we've had to take a pay cut, and the people that are still at work are getting their full wage. From my point of view, the people that have been left behind in my organisation now need to be paid a hell of a lot more than 100% for what they're having to do, because the rest of us can't be there. And I know that our senior management team all volunteered to take a 20% pay cut to reflect the 20% cut that the furloughed staff would have to take as well. Wow. So it isn't a case of them versus us. even though it might feel that way. So I think where we can work together, that's all you can do, really.
I would say 80% of the HR people kind of managers that I'm dealing with currently have been put down to a 3-day week. So their wages have been cut significantly, put down to a 3-day week, and they're all working 5 days, all of them, you know, and they're working at night because they care about the staff. And then the other side of it is they've been, and this isn't just HR, it's like managers, middle managers, because a lot of places don't have or need HR managers. But I'm saying they've been cut down and they have to deliver the bad news. So they have the double whammy, and no one knows, because they say, well, I got an email on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But actually, the person's only been paid for 3 days, and they're working morning, noon and night on less money and delivering bad news that they don't agree with and have to sell their ambassador for it. So just because I'm delivering you this news, like I laid off 10,000 people, doesn't mean I enjoyed it. Do you know? It doesn't mean they're gone. You know, that's not the case. And at the same time, like I said, with additional hours, they're lobbying within an inch of my life, talking to revenue, talking to social welfare. I was freaked out. I had meltdowns over these non-EEA people who normally don't get social welfare entitlements. I said, they're going to starve, you know, and it was till midnight, 1 a.m, dealing with politicians and fighting to get money for these people. And then they'll hear me and see me on these type of things where I'm going, fire this person, do this redundancy, that. But in the background, I'm fighting for a cause that no one will ever know about, because we are real, you know, for the most part. And I genuinely think of the person behind it. But my overall responsibility is to keep that business open. That's all. And I try, I think I can hit that balance. And hopefully anyone, you know, whoever's dealt with me and has ever dealt and feedback over the last 20 years of doing this job is, there is a balance, and you can get the outputs and you can get the results by treating people right. And sometimes that is bad decisions. I've fired people. I've made people redundant. Hundreds and hundreds of people have done it. And I've been hugged. I've been thanked. I've been sent cards after it, because you did it with respect. You know what I mean? And it's done fairly. And if you don't and you're wrong about it, there's no need for that. It costs nothing to be decent, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you're at home, I would recommend upskilling. All the colleges, a load of them are offering amazing free courses. You know, do a course in digital media, online media, you know, fundraising, finances, general accountancy, you know, even presentation skills, how to do my own blogs, etc., writing skills, you know, needlework, whatever feeds your soul. Do more kind of upskilling of your own head. It's all free. They're offering amazing, amazing things at the moment. And I think it is a perfect opportunity when the event has been made redundant, when they start charging for these as well, that you have actually made yourself more commercial to the marketplace, you know. So use that. And it's still time, you know, and I'm not saying people are at home bored. You'd be shocked, isn't it, how your time gets filled in your day. I've two children, I've done up my garden, I want to paint my house, and I'm working like 50 hours a week minimum. But at the same time, you can upskill, and I think that you should look online and see these courses, because it'll keep your mind active, and then you can feed that back into your business or subsequent businesses, you know.
Great. Thanks for that. And I think that's a good place to finish. I think you made a really important point there, that at the end of the day, employers and employees, everyone's goal is to keep these organizations open. That's what everyone wants. And so there's a lot of communication, a lot of things we can do that. There's a middle ground, as you said, that we can all get through this, because we're all impacted by it. Okay. Thank you very much, guys. It was really, really good of you to come on and offer your thoughts and knowledge. And Gillian, if people want to, I mean, I know you're swamped, but if people want to get in touch with you, or if there's any employers or charities out there who maybe feel they could benefit from some advice for you, is going to Kala.ie the best place?
Yeah, so it's just info@Kala, Kala.ie. So okay. My Twitter is Kala, Kala_management. Probably direct messages on Twitter. The employee ones, if they're quick and so I can answer them, but I'm not an employee representative. Yeah. And I don't feel 100% comfortable on the UK side, because to keep up with the Irish legislation through this COVID was a mammoth task.
Sure, I can imagine.
And it's constantly evolving, but I had no need to keep up with the UK ones. But yeah, perhaps on the next one there might be someone there that would be, you know, able to absolutely advise on the UK side of things, you know. But on Irish ones, yeah, I'd be fairly okay with everything.
Yeah, perfect. Absolutely. Thanks for that. And sure, yeah, always good to get some more Twitter followers and stuff like that, even if it's a different country. So
exactly.
And Nikki, thank you so much again for making time for this. Thanks for everything you do in that Facebook group, and it's really good of you to share what you're going through and the people around you going through. So thank you very much, Nikki.
No, thank you, and thanks, Gillian.
Thanks.
All right. Actually, Nikki, sorry, the Facebook group. If any furloughed fundraisers or in that space want to check it out, it's called Furloughed Fundraisers Chat.
You did it first time this time.
Yeah, I can see you looking waiting for me to mess up. Furloughed Fundraisers Chat. I've got it now. All right, good. So go check that out on Facebook. Okay, guys, I'm going to say goodbye to you now. Stay safe. Look after yourselves, and thanks so much again for your time. All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. Bye. All right. Thank you very much to Gillian and Nikki. We're going to wrap it up now. Gillian obviously talked about investing in training, and I'm sorry for the sales plug, but I'm going to say it here anyway. Obviously, at fundraisingeverywhere.com, we have lots of training coming up. Some of it's free. Some of it is affordable. We try and keep everything at most 55 euros, but a lot of it is coming in at 20 euros and things like that. There's a little discount code going across. Let me see if I can do this. Sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't. Yeah, FETV. If you use FETV, then you get 10% off any of the stuff there. So please do check out fundraisingeverywhere.com. Our big conference is coming up in a week or two, but we have some other smaller events before that. So thank you very much for tuning in. If we didn't get to your question, or if you have a question that comes up afterwards, do send them through to us anyway. Tweet us or send them through to us, and we can look at doing another one of these if there's enough stuff and enough interest coming through. But that's it. Everyone, look after yourself. Stay happy and stay healthy. And thank you so much for joining us.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever.
What's up, fundraisers? This is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell, and we are the founders of the virtual fundraising conference, Fundraising Everywhere.
And we have just launched Fundraising Everywhere membership. So if you want full access to the virtual conference every November, if you want full access to the Fundraising Everywhere festival in May, if you want bonus downloads, if you want access to extra sessions, if you want access to VIP events, if you want access to all of my masterclasses online, if you want Pizza for Losers discount, if you want all this stuff and loads more, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which we can't even cram into this tiny podcast ad. But if you want part of that, then go to fundraisingeverywhere.com, become a member, be part of the family, pay a small monthly membership fee to us, and you'll get all of this stuff.
Will that do?